You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Time for a deep dive into the one issue that matters most in a capitalist democracy, money. This is Maggie and the Millionaires Talking Money, a joint production of the Maggie Dawn Show and the Patriotic Millionaires. Now, let's start talking money.
What's up, y'all? I'm Maggie Dawn. This is the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. You can find all the old Maggie and the Millionaires episodes. We do this every day. If you go to civicmedia.us, you can also download the Civic Media app and take Maggie and the Millionaires with you wherever you may go. Check it out, folks. Today, we're joined by Jeff Clements, the CEO of American Promise, a cross-partisan organization working to pass a constitutional amendment that takes big money out of politics. He's practiced law for 3 decades in both public service and private practice. We've got that in common, Jeff. And is the author of Corporations Are Not People. Duh, that's not actually the title of the book. Corporations Are Not People, Reclaiming Democracy from Big Money and Global Corporations. We got Jeff today on to talk about something especially timely as we're just weeks away from the election. Money in politics. More importantly, how the heck do we get rid of it? Jeff, welcome to the show. Thank you so much for making time for us. Can you tell us more about the work that you're doing to put power back in the hands of American voters?
Absolutely, Maggie, and thanks for having me on. It's great to see you. You just put your finger on it. This is all about is power back in the hands of voters. This will be a $16 billion election, a record. And the thing about it isn't so much that that's a lot of money. It is. It's that it comes mostly from billionaires, global companies, a few big unions, but mostly billionaires, global corporations, and a very wealthy elite donor class on each side from a few zip codes. And it goes all over the country. We all see it. It's down to school committee races. And you had a very expensive judicial race in Wisconsin. So, you know, we're seeing it at every level now. And it's absolutely out of control. That's where the power is. The power is going to those who are able to participate in that kind of way of doing politics. It's just reported out today, 3 billionaires alone spent $220 million for the Trump campaign in the last 3 months, just alone, led by Elon Musk. So we have to do something about it if we want power in the hands of voters, which is the American system. That system is broken. And what broke it was the Supreme Court deciding yes. that the reason we have this money like we do. Nobody chose this. Not a single voter said, hey, this is a good idea. Let's do elections this way. Not one American voter said that's a good thing. The Supreme Court did it. They came up with this wacky theory that money is free speech. Corporations are like people. We're not allowed. We, the people, are not allowed to limit spending in elections. It's a theory of the First Amendment that, you know, a clever lawyer like you or me could come up with, and it sounds kind of plausible until you actually try it. And we've been trying it the last 10 years, and this is what we get. So the only way to fix it, though, Maggie, is a constitutional amendment, because the Supreme Court won't fix it itself. So that means Congress, the states, local governments, you try to pass an effective anti-corruption law to put power in the hands of people, it'll get struck down by the judges. They'll say it violates the free speech rights of those who have the money. So we need an amendment to rescue the First Amendment and free speech from the oligarchs, put it back in the hands of the people.
Yeah. When the Citizens United decision was rendered, the idea that the Supreme Court could be, frankly, snookered by the idea that money is speech. If money is speech, those that have the most money get to scream, right? And the rest of us are maybe just whispering. It doesn't even make sense. The surface level plausibility is fast stripped away. The specific amendment that you're talking about, you call it the For Our Freedom Amendment, but even hearing the numbers, and there are a number of Wisconsin billionaires that are topping the donor list right alongside folks like Elon Musk. But when we talk about the scope, it's really hard to get our heads around this. Can you help give us some context? How can we actually understand the impact of this massive spending on our politicians and on our policies?
Well, there's a lot of different ways to look at it. I think what we find at American Promise is actually not really lecturing to people about why it has a problem, but listening to people, because most Americans have a story. Most Americans can tell you about what's happened in their community or why they can't get any representation, why their problems are not getting solved. They can tell you that they see their elected representatives spending 50, 60, 70% of their time talking to donors. We all see, you know, presidential candidates going hat in hand to billionaires and then coming out of the meeting and saying that they're going to do exactly what the billionaire wanted. Up in Maine, we just won a ballot initiative to move the amendment forward, 86% of the vote, yes. And, you know, we didn't need to tell the people in Maine, 86%, that we had a problem. They had a problem of foreign government-owned corporations spending millions of dollars to influence the policies and rules of that the people were going to have to live under through the ballot box in Maine. And these are 100%, not just foreign investors, foreign governments owning these companies and spending money in our elections. One of the CEOs of one of these companies, a Canadian company called Hydro-Québec, said, "Are you allowed to do this in your own country?" And they said, "Oh, no, our elections are serious, you know," and they come here and there's no rules. So they spend all that money. And so the problem isn't just the nasty attack ads that we all have to watch all day and that dominate our lives. It's not the division, the misinformation that is driven by this money alone. It's that systemic problem that the relationship of Americans to our government has been severed. You know, we are not, even if we like our own member of Congress or we like our candidate, it is impossible to have the kind of relationship that the founders of the country and that Americans want, which is the voters have the power. The elected officials are accountable. We have elections where the voters are heard and we move policy in the direction of what the voters want. And it sounds quaint now, doesn't it? Because we all know that's not actually how it works anymore.
Quaint and like some vague fever dream, right? Because we seem so far from that, especially when polling on so many major issues is so overwhelming, and yet we seem to be incapable of moving forward. And this has a real impact. This spending in elections really does impact good jobs, good wages, and a good economy. How is that impacting these kitchen table kinds of issues beyond this idea that, and I think, again, 86% in Maine, I'd venture a guess that 86% of people think money is not speech and that we should have some controls over this kind of not just foreign, but billionaire influence over our elected officials. How is this showing up in kitchen table issues for Americans?
Well, I think it's showing up everywhere. I think, you know, why do wages not rise like they should? Why do we have trouble accessing healthcare? And when we can access it, paying a fortune for it, you know, take a look at what the big pharma spending is. Take a look at what the, you know, health insurer spending is. And you can see a correlation. You know, a few years ago, Ohio and California, just two states with the ballot initiative process, because the legislature wasn't doing it, of course, tried to have some price, you know, control around drug prices. The pharma companies and other health industry companies spent over $100 million, just crushed it. You know, citizens can't raise $100 million to put something on the ballot that's supposed to be a citizens initiative that you do when the legislature is too in bed with the donors that they won't do it. So you try to do it yourself. Well, now even that avenue is closed. So it's affecting how much we pay for things. It's affecting what we see in the grocery store. It's affecting our jobs. It's affecting the water we drink, the air we breathe. I mean, this kinds of schools our kids go to. So, you know, it's a good system democracy, because all of those can be improved, because we're actually pretty good at talking with each other in our communities, at trying to solve problems. We don't have to agree all the time, but, you know, when voters are heard and, you know, we can debate all we want, and then the election comes, and then we move forward and make some of these problems better. But that just doesn't happen. And so that's the end game of how it affects us, is that it crushes the faith Americans have in democracy. And then we start turning on each other, and we get into the kind of nonsense that we're seeing in our elections now. And that's very dangerous. So we really have to take this seriously. Fortunately, you know, going into this year, early 2024, Pew Research put reducing money in politics at the very top of American priorities. That had never happened before. It's right after terrorism and the economy, right? Yes. So, and I think because Americans connect the dots, of course, healthcare is on there. Of course, war and other big issues are on there. But Americans connect the dots that if we don't reduce money in politics, we can't start solving some of the other issues that go right into our wallets and our kids' lives and our communities and everything else.
Folks, that's Jeff Clements, CEO of American Promise, a cross-partisan organization working to pass the For Our Freedom Amendment to take big money out of politics. He's been both a public sector and private sector lawyer. He literally wrote the book on this, Corporations Are Not People, Reclaiming Democracy from Big Money and Global Corporations. He's our special guest on today's episode of Maggie and the Millionaires Talking Money. We've got about a minute left. I just want to talk about this as a cross-partisan or bipartisan or whatever party you happen to be in issue. You reach both sides of the aisle on this. Everybody cares about this, regardless of whether we put an R, a D, or an I, or something else behind our names.
Absolutely. And in less than a minute, I can tell you Americans are united on this. We at American Promise, we are Republicans, Democrats, Independents, our staff, our board, our volunteers across the country. And there is no daylight. If you look at the polling and you look how people vote, Republicans, Democrats, and Independents all agree we need a constitutional solution so we can limit money in politics. And then we'll have plenty to argue about and compete about in elections. But all of us are getting hurt right now. And fortunately, at American Promise, we can come together. This is the only thing we do. There's no bait and switch. There's no, you know, other stuff we're doing. This is it. So it's a place where Americans can unite and get this constitutional amendment done.
Folks, that's Jeff Clements, CEO of American Promise, the organization working to take big money out of politics through a constitutional amendment. We're going to talk about, is that even possible today? How would we even make that happen? How long might this fix take? All when we come back on this special episode of Maggie and the Millionaires Talking Money. We're going to have more with Jeff Clements after these brief messages here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Keep it locked.
Time for a deep dive into the one issue that matters most in a capitalist democracy, money. This is Maggie and the Millionaires Talking Money, a joint production of the Maggie Dawn Show and the Patriotic Millionaires. Now, let's start talking money.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Maggie Dawn. This is the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Every day leading up to the election at 3 o'clock, we do Maggie and the Millionaires Talking Money, because you care about child care policy, you care about education, you care about securing the border. It's about the money, y'all. And one of the biggest problems in returning power to the people in this country is the absolute avalanche of money in politics. If money is speech, then regular middle class folks, we're barely whispering. And billionaires and foreign corporations that can buy influence, they're the ones that are screaming at our politicians. Our avenue for change is through the ballot box and eventually through a constitutional amendment. So says our guest today, Jeff Clements. He is the CEO of American Promise, a cross-partisan organization working to pass a constitutional amendment that takes big money out of politics. He wrote the book on it. Corporations are not people, reclaiming democracy from big money and global corporations. Thanks so much for making time, Jeff. We've been setting the stage and talking about one, how this isn't an issue for Republicans or Democrats or independents or people who are usually disengaged from the process. This is an everybody issue. And you see that when you go and put the amendment on ballots like you just did in Maine, getting 86% of the vote in favor of a constitutional amendment. But our politics seems so screwed up right now. People seem so divided. And of course, the money in the politics is part of the reason why. But a constitutional amendment seems like a really high hurdle to clear. Is this even possible today?
It's absolutely possible. In fact, it's happening, and it's happening, I think, in the next several years. And I'm not talking like 10, 50, 20 years, but it's on right now. And I think that the first step is for us to accept that we actually do have power in this republic, but we're on the ropes. You know, if we don't use the sort of, you know, in emergency break glass mechanism of constitutional amendments, you know, shame on us. So that means it's on us to figure it out. And so when I started this a few years ago, I had the same questions I think most Americans have. Really, an amendment? How do we do that? When have we ever done that? And of course, it turns out, yeah, we've amended the Constitution 27 times. And what's interesting about it, Maggie, is we do this as Americans about every 50 years when things are really bad. So we did the Bill of Rights right after the Revolution, and the Constitution came out of Philadelphia, the first 10 amendments of the Bill of Rights, and they're pretty good ones. And then another 50 years and real problems, we're into the Civil War, we come out of that mess with three constitutional amendments to try to put the country and democracy back together, kind of get back to work and family and everything that Americans would rather do than politics or amend the Constitution. 50 years later, things are a mess. Between 1910 and 1920, war, pandemic, massive economic inequality, eclipsed maybe only by our own time, but real problems. And we did four constitutional amendments in the space of a decade. Did it again between 61 and 71. Again, when people were questioning whether this country can stick together and keep going. So this is exactly the kind of time we do amendments. So how do we do it? Well, look in the Constitution. It turns out you can amend the Constitution with a 2/3 vote in Congress and ratification in 3/4 of the states. So is that hard? Yes. Can you do it with just one party or in a partisan way? Absolutely not. So anyone who talks about an amendment who isn't cross-partisan, who isn't doing what we do at American Promise to unite Americans behind it, isn't going to get it done, because you need 2/3 vote in Congress and ratification in 3/4 of the states. But the reason we launched American Promise is we saw the opportunity. 85% is not unusual. Most Americans want this. So what if they had a place to go where Republicans and Democrats and independents could actually work together? That's what American Promise does. And so now we have 22 states that say we're ready to ratify. We hope Wisconsin could be 23. So we're doing a lot in Wisconsin and would love people to sign up at AmericanPromise.net. We're in Pennsylvania, we're in Arizona, we're in Utah, Wyoming, Texas. Those states are vying to be the 23rd and 24th. And when states pass these resolutions in the legislatures or in through ballot initiatives where people can do that, like they did in Maine, that is how we're building power. And it's how we can use that power to make Congress actually vote the amendment out and put it back to the states for ratification. So this has been happening. We have a lot of support in Congress. We're having interesting conversations. The Democrats got out a little ahead right after Citizens United. So in Congress, it's mostly Democrats so far. That's not what we see in the states. We see the Republicans leading on this as much as Democrats, and we can win this anywhere. We got a majority vote in Wyoming just a few months ago. So there's nowhere where we can't win this. We're going to take that to Washington. We're having good conversations with Republicans in Washington. So we're going to get the 2/3 vote. We're going to get ratification in 3/4 of the states. And what the amendment will do, you can see it on AmericanPromise.net. It will give us the power to pass limits on how money is used in elections. And that's not unusual. We used to do that. We've had anti-corruption laws going back 100 years. There used to be a limit on PACs, $5,000. there wasn't such a thing as a super PAC. It was illegal to do more than $5,000 to a PAC. Now you have people putting $100 million and calling it a super PAC. That's what the Supreme Court did. We can unwind that. This does not have to be the way things are in America. We can fix this, but we got to get that amendment to the Constitution done.
And every Wisconsinite will, I think, remember with pride, regardless of their party, the work that our former Senator Russ Feingold did, that the Supreme Court then undid to try to limit money in politics. We got to get back to that. Again, where is the website that folks can find out more, Jeff?
It's AmericanPromise.net, all one word, AmericanPromise.net.
Wonderful. Thanks so much. That is Jeff Clements. He is the CEO of American Promise, a cross-partisan organization working to pass a constitutional amendment that takes big money out of politics. He also wrote the book on this called Corporations Are Not People, Reclaiming Democracy from Big Money and Global Corporations. I'll just say this on a personal note. I have always, as a lawyer and as someone that has cared deeply about public policy, been so personally disturbed by the access to both Democrats and Republicans that the richest among us can buy. It shouldn't be this way. It doesn't have to be this way. And Americans should be demanding of every debate, of every candidate, their commitment to the For Our Freedom Amendment. Let's take money out of politics. Thanks so much, Jeff, for your great work on this issue.
Thank you, Maggie. Really appreciate the conversation.
That's going to do it for today's episode of Maggie and the Millionaires Talking Money. We do this every day at 3 p.m. Follow me on Twitter, Insta, and Facebook. The Maggie Dawn Show. Back with more in a moment.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Or welcome if you're just joining us. My name is Maggie Dawn. This is the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Don't go anywhere. If you are in your car and arriving home before 4 o'clock, you're going to want to stay in your car because there is an absolutely massive interview coming up on the Maggie Dawn Show. I am so thrilled and so excited. I had the opportunity to speak with the First Lady of Minnesota earlier this morning, very early this morning. And that interview is going to be the very last thing you hear from me today here on the Maggie Dawn Show. So keep it locked. That's going to be the last segment of the day. It was both fun and extremely enlightening to talk with Gwen Walls, wife of Governor Tim Walls. Very impressed with the First Lady of Minnesota. And she just also seems like a lovely Midwesterner, like so many of our neighbors. Boy, she's a regular person. And isn't that nice to see in our elected officials and their spouses? You know, less weird, more regular people. I like it. You're not going to want to miss that. That is the last interview of this installment of the Maggie Dawn Show today. We're going to be getting that in the last segment. Today, I just wanted to finish up today before we get to that interview. I just wanted to address a couple of excellent questions that I got during our last segment, which was Maggie and the Millionaires Talking Money. I was joined by Jeff Clements, who runs American Promise. He's the CEO, and they're working to pass a constitutional amendment to help take big money out of politics. And the reason it has to be a constitutional amendment, as Jeff explained, is because of the Supreme Court that has said that basically any other legislative limitations on spending in politics and elections are unconstitutional violations of the First Amendment. And so we have to change our Constitution to tell the Supreme Court that corporations are not people and that money is not speech. But one of you very astute listeners asked me, how exactly does ratifying a constitutional amendment occur? Do voters directly get to vote on whether to ratify the constitutional amendment. And the answer to that is no. It is the state legislatures that have to vote to ratify the amendment. There's a couple of ways that a constitutional amendments can get started. All of our 27 amendments to the Constitution always came forward by a proposal from Congress with a two-thirds majority vote. You got to get it in both the House of Representatives and the Senate. Two-thirds of both bodies have to say, this is the proposed constitutional amendment. If that happens, it doesn't go to the president's desk, right? Because that is not a matter for the president to decide. Once you get those two-thirds votes to consider a constitutional amendment, usually in modern times, there's been a time period, a time limit by which the states have to consider the amendment. It then gets passed to the states. It's interesting. The National Archives and Records Administration Office of the Federal Register actually takes the original documentation from Congress and adds legislative history notes to it, to this joint resolution, again, having to come from both the House and the Senate, and publishes it. And then they assemble an information package for the states that has the legislation and all the legislative history notes. And then it also includes any of the formal red lines or versions of the amendment that may have been debated by the House and the Senate. And then they basically submit that to the states for their consideration. There's like a formal letter of notification that goes to the governor of each state, along with all this informational material prepared by the National Archives. And then the governors are required to formally submit that amendment to their state legislatures. And then the state legislatures have to vote, and you have to get to 38 of the 50 states ratifying, their state legislatures ratifying, in other words, adopting the constitutional amendment. And that paperwork has to get sent back to the National Archives. And in an interesting note about Wisconsin's role in one of the constitutional amendment processes, the constitutional amendment giving women the right to vote, Wisconsin ratified it, and there was actually a race to see which state would get its ratification documents to the National Archives first, which I think is really cool. And Wisconsin actually took the vote and put a guy on a train so that he could beat the other states that were also trying to be first to the archives with their ratification documents. But ladies and gentlemen, especially the Wisconsinites listening out there, to all of you, you will be very proud to know that Wisconsin got their ratification documents giving women the right to vote, that constitutional change, to the National Archives first. So that is, we have a long and proud history in the state of Wisconsin about that. But folks, after all of this deep discussion this afternoon, and certainly we're going to have another deep dive tomorrow, we got Tom Paulsiewicz joining me. We're going to dissect Donald Trump's comments before the Economic Forum of Chicago yesterday. We got all that sound ready to go for tomorrow. We're going to take a bunch of that sound. I'm going to point out all the lies that Donald Trump told people in that meeting. It's also just a bunch of nonsense. One theme, I won't bury the lead, is that Donald Trump responds to questions about major policy issues and questions by referencing anecdotes. Oh, well, I talked to this guy, and this guy told me that blah, blah, blah. We're all familiar with this. He actually never answers the questions. I took careful account throughout the hour and 10-minute interview of whether or not Donald Trump actually answered the questions that he was asked. And he was only asked about six of them. And he legit doesn't answer any of the questions straightforwardly. He just references these random anecdotes. Now, I'll tell you this, as an economist and a lawyer and someone that's worked in government for a long time, anecdotes do not make policy. The only people who rely on anecdotes to make policy are people who have the ego of a giant who think that their personal experience defines the universe. You get what I'm saying? Like, oh, well, if I have happened to experience this thing one time, well, then that one time means that that's how it always works. In other words, a small-minded, narcissistic, you know, sociopath would rely on anecdotes to craft the United States foreign or economic policy. Turns out that's exactly what Donald Trump does. And many of the questions that he was being asked at the Economic Forum were about the overall impacts of policies on small businesses and the middle class. And Donald Trump never answered any of those questions. But Tom Paulsowitz and I, one of the most reasonable guys in politics, a two-time congressional candidate, small business owner, Navy veteran, he's my co-host on Thursdays for an hour from 2 to 3. We're going to dissect that tomorrow. We're going to point out all the whys. You're not going to want to miss that. Then Tom and I are going to be joined by one of the leaders of Planned Parenthood Advocates of Wisconsin. We're going to talk about the importance of the youth vote, building on today's discussion for Sounds Like Change, Christina Reynolds, the Senior Vice President of Communications and Strategy at Emily's List. So we're going to build on that discussion tomorrow with one of Planned Parenthood Advocates of Wisconsin, one of their leaders. Really looking forward to that. All that coming up. And of course, Gwen Walls at the end of this show. But y'all, I got to take a little break from the politics. If you got any final political thoughts, we'll take them. 855-752-4842. But then I want to tease you with this final topic of the day. And Aaron, you are welcome to chime in. Aaron Zommers on the board, part of the Maggie Dawn Show team. Because I happened to read a little article about this and it got me thinking. The article was about, what is the thing that bugs you most about modern technology? And the writer went off for quite some time about email. And I have a whole litany of email pet peeves, like a ton of them. Many, many, many email pet peeves. I want to know what everybody's email or tech pet peeve is. 855-752-4842. That's 855-75-CIVIC. What is your technology pet peeve? And it doesn't count to call up and say you hate social media. No. That's just a given. Everybody like love, hate social media. We all doom scroll. We all rage, text and post. We get that. Don't give me the generics. I want specifics because I have, you'll all be not very surprised to hear, I have a whole litany of peeves about tech. 855-75-CIVIC. I want to give Mark from Prairie du Sac, who's been a very patient friend of the show here, a shot at what he would like to share this afternoon. Politics are still fair game, Mark. You've been waiting. Or, of course, you can give me your thoughts on what bothers you most about tech these days.
Well, I don't know about tech, but I actually posted on the Facebook page a quote from Abigail Adams, her plaint to her husband, John Adams, on March 31st of 1776, more or less, don't forget the ladies, that women, she more or less is saying, women shouldn't rely on men to decide their fates. And, you know, that I don't have the exact quote in front of me right now, but, you know, it's the misogyny, you know, dates back to even back then, because if I remember right from history class, that while John Adams was doing his thing during the Revolutionary War, and then fleeing off to Europe to, you know, defend, you know, to make political points for the United States, Abigail was back at home running the farm. And she was saying, you know, back in 1776, that women should have a right to say something in politics. And I think that too many of our politicians today just want to put women back to pre-1776 and say, just keep your mouth shut, your men know the best thing for you, and, you know, just be quiet.
Yeah, zip it. Zip it, ladies. Well, I think women are going to send a really strong message to J.D. Vance, Donald Trump, and the Theo bros that J.D. Vance follows, many of whom who have explicitly endorsed the idea that the 19th Amendment giving women the right to vote was a mistake, that men should be the head of households and that households should be allocated votes, and that men, as the head of the household, should determine how those votes are cast in our elections. I'm not making that up. Go read about it. The Theo bros, this is part of their fundamental approach to the world. J.D. Vance, one of those Theo bros, an acolyte, pun intended, of a lot of their teachings and thinking. That's why he says, you know, he's waded in on the weak sauce version of that. Like, oh, childless cat ladies and women without children. You should have your votes. Those should just count less because you're not fully human. But we're going to save more of my political hair on fire thinkings for tomorrow. Folks, we got the Gwen Walls interview coming up next. Aaron Zommers, I want to give you a crack at it. What, you got a couple of favorite tech peeves?
Yeah, I think my favorite tech pet peeve is the constant need to reinvent the wheel in tech. Like, for example, the Windows Start menu. Fantastic. Why we got to move it to the middle? Why you got to add all this other weird stuff with it? Why do you have to make it harder to find things? It, like, they just, every tech company has to change everything every new release instead of using systems that work.
Yeah, it's a real bugger. I have to say, the reformatting, the updating of systems, I always dread it when I get my, oh, systems upgrade, because I'm never going to be able to find anything after the upgrade happens. It's ridiculous. But I got to tell you, one of my biggest tech pet peeves is the fact that there are so many ways to get in touch with a person. It used to be snail mail and the telephone. Because what happens now is I get a text message, I get an email about the text message, I get a voicemail alerting me to the email and the text message. Stop! One point of contact is plenty.
And Instagram and Twitter and Snapchat.
It's too much. Too much. I can't keep track of it all. And then you got the DMs and all that. The best way to get in touch with me is always on the Maggie Dawn Show. Folks, we got the First Lady of Minnesota coming up next. That's going to be our closeout segment of the day. I pre-recorded it, so I'm going to say to you all right now, I'll stand up for you. I hope you stand up for me. But it's always better when we stand together. Keep it locked for this incredible interview with Gwen Walls, wife of vice presidential candidate Tim Walls. Up next here. Welcome, Wisconsin and beyond. I'm Maggie Dawn, host of The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. I love my job many days, but today I especially love my job because I get to talk with Gwen Walls, the First Lady of Minnesota. What a privilege to have you, Mrs. Walls. Thank you for making time for The Maggie Dawn Show this afternoon.
Oh, thanks so much for having me. You know, I'm a huge Wisconsin fan and a huge fan of what you're able to do on radio. And if you would, just call me Gwen.
Oh, well, thank you so much for that. As my mother says, you can call me Maggie or Margaret, but don't call me late for dinner. That's how we do it in the Midwest, you know. Gwen, you spent over 20 years working both first in Nebraska and then in Minnesota in the Mankato School District as an English teacher and as an administrator. You have made part of your brief or duties as First Lady of Minnesota education, corrections, and gun control. And obviously, you and your husband are now on this new national level with a new spotlight. And I wanted to ask you, of course, when you're campaigning on a national level, the critics, the haters, if you will, come up with these new attack lines. One of the lines that I've heard about your husband, Gwen, is Tampon Tim. And I know that the MAGA cult thinks that that's some sort of dig on your husband. But when I went and did my own research to find out why are they calling him Tampon Tim, I actually found that he likely wears that as a badge of honor. Gwen, tell us what that's all about.
You know, first of all, the inclination of the other campaign or the right to name call is just not something that I really approve of in the first place. But if they're going to continue to do it, you know, I think that we have to just define what it is that's remarkable that's been done in Minnesota and that Tim's advocated for. We have had a real agenda responding to the needs of Minnesotans. So, you know, the free school lunch and breakfast, that was part of our agenda. And we said, what else do we need in schools? And as we listened, people were having trouble accessing feminine products. And so Tim made those available in schools. I think that makes sense. You know, if this is something that distracts from learning, well, then we're going to take care of that. Why wouldn't we? Because we're interested in students learning and not being distracted by other things, and certainly not by name calling.
Yeah. And again, I think it's an absolute badge of honor, and I congratulate you for putting the needs of students above politics. You have been a passionate advocate for reproductive freedom. So has your husband. What are some of the contrasts that jump out to you, Gwen, when you look at what your husband and Vice President Harris are proposing versus their opponents in this next election?
Well, I think it is absolutely clear, and this is so important to me, that Tim and Kamala trust women. And they trust women to make their own healthcare decisions. And they believe that that is a right and a freedom for women. That is very different than how I hear the Trump and Vance ticket talk about this. Recently President Trump said, you know, he would be a woman's protector. I find that so offensive.
Yes.
I did not ask that man to be my protector, and I'm not interested in that. And I'm not interested in his view of the choices that I can make in my own life or in the lives of women across this country. And so I think that distinction about being able to make our own choices, and if you can't make your own choice about healthcare, well, then what else do they think you can't make your choices about? Tim and Kamala trust women. I trust women. Women I've met across this country, which has been fabulous during the campaign to get to do. It's a real opportunity. Women I meet in Wisconsin. I've been in Wisconsin 5 different times recently and done 7 different events. And I haven't met a woman yet who isn't a capable, strong Wisconsin woman who can make her own healthcare decisions and decisions about her life. So I think, you know, we Midwestern women can just send a message right here about what we believe, who we are, and how we're ready and always have made our own decisions. Then that's a real distinction. I'm not giving that power up to anyone, and Kamala and Tim would never ask that of women, and that thought would never cross their mind because they trust women.
Boy, that's checking a lot of boxes for me, being raised by very strong Wisconsin women. I hear that. One of the surprising things I read about you, Madam First Lady, is that you're the first lady in Minnesota's history to have an office in the Minnesota State Capitol, which I thought speaks so much to how much your husband respects you. And I found that little fact surprising. Is there something surprising about your husband that you think voters need to know, Gwen?
Oh, gosh, something surprising. Well, you can't put Tim in a box. Like, he is really interested and diverse. You know, he's a world traveler. He's an educator. He's a great dad. He's passionate about canoeing and outdoor life and football. He's also passionate about anything our kids are interested in. But something that might be surprising, I would say that he likes vegetables. That might be surprising. You know, he doesn't look like a vegetable eater, but he's really, like, he will have radishes and carrots and that sort of thing for a snack. It's like some of his favorite snacks are vegetables.
Gwen, you had me at raw vegetable. My dad likes some roughage as well. Folks, that's Gwen Walls, First Lady of Minnesota. Thank you so much. And thank you for everything you're doing on the trail. Go Tim and Kamala. That is First Lady of Minnesota, Gwen Walls, here on the Maggie Dawn Show on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Thank you, Maggie. Let's vote, Wisconsin. Let's vote.
Yay.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.